call to order the meeting of the Palm Coast Utilities Advisory Committee. We'll start off by Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call.
Robert Wieners.
Present.
Malcolm Kennedy.
Present.
Michael Hardiman.
Present.
Jack Pittman is excused, and Victor Sarmiento is excused. John Smart.
Here.
And William Dean.
Next item of business would be the minutes of the previous meeting. I was not here, so I can't comment on them. Does anybody have any comments on changes or additions to the minutes? A motion to accept the minutes as read.
Motion to accept.
Second. Approved. Back to pharmaceutical disposal. There was a program last Saturday that the sheriff's office had for taking back unused prescription medications. I don't know what the results of that were, but as you know, this committee's been working on that for some time, and even one take back, I guess, is better than none. And hopefully, we can expand that to more frequent take backs, since it is a problem that could affect our water supply.
How does that work? You don't go house to house.
No.
How do you collect these pills?
No, the sheriff's office sets up once a year. This is a nationwide program, a once-a-year one. The sheriff's office sets up locations in town on one particular day, which happened to be last Saturday, and they have a sheriff's officer on duty, and the drugs are returned to the sheriff's office, and they in turn take them and destroy them.
And we don't have any feedback yet as to...
No, I haven't seen any.
No. Unfortunately, Jack Pittman is not there today. He's
yes. Jack Pittman would usually follow up on that. I'm sure we'll find out at the next meeting what the results were. The difference was, I think, in this one, they weren't giving out any cash awards for taking them back than they did in the last one. And we were wondering how much of an effect that would have as an incentive for people to return. Any other comments on the pharmaceutical disposal?
I just think that the sheriff has to be commended for finally doing a collection and coordination with the national program.
Correct.
At least we can get it every 6 months. I was hoping for every 2 months, but
yeah.
At least every the last one was in September.
Mm-hmm.
So this is roughly 6 months.
Yeah.
So hopefully we can get at least every 6 months.
Next item of business is new business. And I'd like to introduce our new member, Mr. William Benny. Might just give us a little bit of background, if you could, on what your experience has been on city boards. And
well, let's see. I sing.
I know you've had quite a bit of experience. So some of the newer members maybe that are not familiar with you.
Well, I'm retired from the city council. I was on the original council for 8 years, term limit out. Prior to that, I don't know whether I guess you all read my comments when I applied for the position. I had been involved in Utilities Authority in New Jersey for about 6 years. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, while on the council, I had the benefit of the activities of our water and sewer department, so I know what mm-hmm. they were up to and where they were operating. And other than that, I think those are probably the only things that might be applicable to my activity around a water and sewer advisory committee.
Great. Great to have you aboard, and welcome. Next item of business is committee to elect new chair and vice chair for a term of 1 year.
Is anybody going to volunteer? Because of my health, I really can't. I don't think we'll take it for another year. It's just changing some chemo right now, and I don't know how that's going to affect me. So. I don't hear anybody volunteering.
How come you were vice chair?
Well, I think in view of my tremendous faux pas at last month's meeting, in which I proposed to violate the sunshine law, at least I could do it probably to volunteer. I'm not sure that is a bunch of recommendation. But
okay. No, that's fine. Do you have anybody else that would like to volunteer as vice chair, since... It's usually only one or two times a year that you've got to fill in. It's not that great a responsibility. It's just a matter of being here.
Do you have any idea whether Jack or this other fellow might be interested?
I know Jack is not, and Victor, I haven't talked to Victor. I don't know that he's... He does have to be out of town quite often, and I think he would probably... step back because of that. Would you be interested in doing it, Bill? I know you're a new member, and it's a little tough to walk in here with
this as a last resort.
Okay. Well, that, usually the vice chair, it is the last resort.
Yeah, well, they can start around.
But like I said, I think I've only missed two this year, so it's not really... It's not really that you're going to be called upon to do it every month or every other month or something. But if you're agreeable to it, I'd certainly like to put your name up.
It'll be fine, but you ought to poll the rest of the members, see if any of them would.
Well, we know that Jack is definitely not interested. And like I said, Victor, I know that he has told me that he is required to be out of town quite a bit, and he really didn't feel that he could put the time into it. Okay. With that, I'll ask that we nominate Malcolm and Mr. Benny for chairman and vice chairman. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Okay, great. Congratulations.
Give him the book of rules.
I have news for the vice chairman. He's gonna be chairing the meeting in July and August.
Okay. Well, hey, if you need any help, I'm more than willing to help. I'm sure Malcolm is done. Old business. Committee members to discuss the status of the underground wire ordinance. Are we still working?
With Brian.
Okay. Next item of business would be committee members to discuss new ideas. Anyone have any new ideas that they'd like to throw out there for the committee to look at?
Comment?
Surely.
I don't know whether it would be helpful, but... What if the staff made their reports of upcoming activities that might either answer or have something to do with some new ideas we've been thinking about, or maybe kick off some ideas on our part after hearing what may be new and coming along by the city that we may not be aware of?
Mm-hmm. So put that in with our, I mean, prior to our new business, in other words, so that they would make their reports, say, after the minutes of the meeting. That's a good suggestion. Let's, does that present a problem for you, John, or for Richard? No. Okay. Anybody else have any comments on that as to what? Okay. If not, then we need to make a motion to change the order of the agenda so that staff would give their reports after we read the minutes of the previous meeting. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
I'm a little concerned about the when we do the public participation.
Yeah.
It's getting further.
I have it in two places.
Yeah. That's great. I'm sorry, I missed that. I missed it down at the bottom of the page. Yeah, because I could see it on the back. So really, it should be.
It's right underneath it.
Yeah, it should come right after new business. We'll make certain that we pick that up next time. Is there any public participation at this time?
Yes, actually, I do have an item. Lee Alford, Greenland, Timothy Miller, this man's firm at 10 Florida Park Drive North, Palm Coast. And if I could just have just a moment of the time of the board, just to let you know that we help co-sponsor along with the Chamber of Commerce Engineering Merit Badge event for the Scouts here in Flagler County. And it was last Saturday, and John Bowen came over and on his day off and worked with the Scouts, talked to them about their engineering and their educational opportunities. We just wanted to, you know, on behalf of the Boy Scouts, give them a vote of our appreciation. So, thanks.
Great.
That's it.
Thank you. That brings us to updates from Richard.
Shows the elevation above mean sea level of groundwater, in this case the confined superficial aquifer, since 2007, with the white line being a 15-year average. Blue line is our current, and we didn't go down to zero, that's just uncharted data right now. So the April data, is now on the chart. They hadn't seen that yet. Been pretty dry this year so far. Interestingly enough, this chart really shows very quickly results of rainfall. We did get some rain in January and February. Water table was up a couple of feet from the January water table reads, and been kind of holding fairly level. And you can see the water table right now is lowest as it's been since 2007. But by the same token, 2010, just 12 short months ago, it was our record highs. So all very reflective of rainbow. Water plant two, which is the Florida aquifer, reacts quite differently to the rainfall events. And actually, we in that aquifer were not below the. We're not at a record low for the period reported. So we're right at the same level we were in 2009 and 2007. Right. So these guys all find this stuff very interesting, apparently. So I bring it back each month so we can all look at it. Any questions on that?
Are you a long way from being concerned about the level?
We aren't concerned about the level. The health of the aquifer is still adequate. And we have additional water supply wells under construction right now. We just started up a new well down in the south of the Fordham aquifer last month, LW19, which is the one you may have seen under construction on US-1 just south of Belfair. And what we find is what we would expect to find is as we spread out our withdrawals, we can rotate wells and maintain the health of the aquifer.
And so we're talking about different aquifers?
Yes, the two.
I see these two, but...
Yeah, those are the only two that we draw.
But you have other ones within our ability to...
No, those are the... In this neck of the woods, there's groundwater, which is only a couple feet deep, which isn't quality or quantity enough to draw from the groundwater. Then there's the confined superficial, which is about 60 to 80 feet deep, and very limited in scope where the water quality is sufficient for drinking water. And for us, that's pretty much the Pine Lakes area and west and north of the Pine Lakes area. So as you go north and west, you're into our well field up around the Palm Coast Park, up around Water Treatment Plant number 3, west of the railroad tracks, on all the old Rainier property, and over into Old Brick in the Old Lakes area. That's where the confined superficial aquifer is of adequate quality for us to withdraw and treat. And the confined superficial, which is 80 to 60, 80 feet deep typically, receives its recharge locally. Right? Local rainfall ends up in the confined superficial. The Florida aquifer in our neck of the woods is for the most part brackish. But when we get down into the southwestern part of Palm Coast, we can get into they call it the land high, a section of the Florida aquifer is fresh. And we're down around, I think we're around 200, 250 feet deep in that area. And we can withdraw water from the Florida aquifer that's drinkable. Anyplace else, the Florida aquifer under Palm Coast is brackish, contains salt. Someday we may be able to tap that brackish aquifer. Water treatment plant number 2 and water treatment plant number 3 can be modified to treat brackish water, but right now our permit doesn't allow us to withdraw brackish water.
You don't have to consider it anyway, right?
Right now the fresh water supply is adequate to serve our needs. And we continue to expand the well field, because right now the well field does go west of the railroad tracks. We currently have a project under construction that adds 12 wells, and they're all west of the railroad tracks, just west of Water Treatment Plant number 3. So that's the expansion of our well field. Those are the main aquifers. And then there's the upper Florida and the lower Florida. The lower Florida, you get down into the 1,000 feet deep, 1,600 feet deep. We have we have actually done some test wells down into the lower floor and down into the 1,600-foot depth, and the water is basically the salinity contents of any seawater. So that's really the available aquifer source. And then I have the water demand chart. This is 2 years of our water demands. The dark blue bottom is water plant one. Stacked on top of that is water plant two, and on top of that is water plant three. That's the average daily output of those plants on a monthly basis. And the line on the top is the max day that month for all three plants combined. So the difference between the top of the bar and the line graph is the average day versus the max day. So you can see here that during the month of April, our max day was 9.675 million gallons that day, when our average was about 8. And again, the max day is a real indicator of dry weather. Most of it's related to irrigation, and some of the average day is as well.
Is your equipment stressed at that point, or do you still have?
No, we have. Quite a bit more. We now have 15 million gallons a day of capacity. 15.38 million a day plant capacity. We wouldn't want to be pumping our wells, the existing wells, at 15 million gallons a day. We hope to expand our well field before we get to that average day demand, which is way off. Average day, as you can see, for the month of April, is like 8 million a day. Back in January, we were 6.5. I don't have the wastewater chart today. I haven't got the data for that yet for the month of April, so that hasn't changed since last month. But for Bill's benefit, that shows the wastewater for the last 2 years through the month of March. Again, the average day is the green line, only one plant, and the max day is the blue line. And we've been talking a lot over the last several months about the utility's effort in reducing inflow infiltration. Inflow infiltration, the inflow is water that flows into the sanitary sewer collection system from storm events, flooding activities, and that kind of thing. Infiltration is just pipes leaking groundwater into the pipes. Very common phenomenon in any utility. Something that all utilities battle with. We have, over the last year to year and a half, we've been very aggressively trying to find our sources of inflow infiltration and plug them up. Last year, we contracted with a company to smoke test all the gravity sewer, which we did. Found basically that the majority of the culprits were broken clean-out caps. The clean-out caps are typically in your lawn, getting run over by lawnmowers. So we found literally hundreds of those. Repaired those, as well as a few other areas where we have problems, like people connecting their downspouts to their sanitary sewer, and then we get to collect and treat the rainwater from the roof. Major breaks in the pipe will actually come out of the ground, indicating that the pipe in the ground is broken. First round of smoke testing, we obviously find the big holes. During that process last year, while we had a contractor do the smoke testing, we learned how to do it by following the contractor and went out and bought the equipment necessary. Now we're doing our own smoke testing with our own in-house crews, and we're going completely through the gravity sewer system for the second time.
It's cheaper to
do it. It's cheaper for us to do it, yes, by far. So anyway, we feel pretty certain that the difference between the green line and the blue line has changed considerably due to that effort. Now, grant you, we haven't had a 30-inch rainfall event like we had in 09, so we really don't know what the effects of our inflow infiltration project is when it comes to a major storm event like that. But
when did you do the work, 09 or 10?
We've been working on it for about a year and a half. So we did most of the work in 2010.
So some of the difference between late 2010-11 might be better than early 2010.
Right. We also have had a couple of projects where we put in some slip lining in some of the older sections. Just completed in the original section, Section 8, the Cooper-Casper area. All of that is all clay pipe that was installed in the early 70s, so we completely slip lined all of that gravity sewer in there to stop infiltration. And we're sealing a lot of old manholes that might be leaking around, sealing new manholes. So we've been working pretty diligently in trying to get a handle on inflow infiltration, which obviously helps us tremendously during storm events and not having to pump that all of that storm water. As far as capital goes, we have bid a new pipeline that's going to go from Seminole Woods Parkway at Citation under I-95 over to Old Kings Road and up to State Road 100. That project got approved by council last night, so we'll be negotiating that contract to get that project underway. And what that does is that gives us a loop, an additional loop to fortify our distribution system, another crossing under I-95, which is, we have a limited number of crossings, so which will allow us to move more water east down 100 and up Culver Lane so that we can improve the water pressures in the industrial park, Sea Ray, and on up into Grand Haven, Palm Coast Plantation, those areas. It also will provide water. It should Old King Grove develop south of the school or north of the State Road 100, provides additional water supply in that area. And the other major project we got going is the well field project I was telling you about. It's activating 12 additional wells for water treatment.
How long do you think it'll take to put this line in and just approve it?
I'm not sure what the construction time is, probably 6 months. Right now, it's real questionable delivery of materials. We got a few miles of PVC pipe, and they're already telling us they can't guarantee any delivery time. Oil prices obviously play a big role in the price of PVC pipe. But more importantly, apparently PVC pipe is made with a high-quality resin that comes out of Japan. And right now, a lot of things are coming out of Japan that used to. So there's a lot of uncertainty on the delivery of the pipe. We're not sure exactly how that's all going to play out. The Wellfield project. 12 wells, the pipe is in the ground now. That's what they've been working on. The piping is done. Now we're starting to work on the well sites themselves and waiting for delivery of pumping equipment and electrical panels and things like that.
Is any of that in anticipation of the subdivisions that are, have just been annexed?
It's, I suppose you could say yes, but it's providing for growth no matter where it happens, because that's where our water supply expansion will be at Water Plant 3. We have Water Plant 1 is at 6 million gallons a day. That's built out. That won't be added to anymore. Water Plant 2 is at 6.38, and it's got another 3 million gallon a day train to be built someday. So that plan is expandable to 9, 9.5. Water Plant 3 actually has treatment capacity of 3 million gallons a day, but only has well field capacity of 1.5. So the 12 wells is to bring that plant, the raw water supply to that plant, up to the capacity of the plant. That plant's expandable to 9. This well field project will bring that up to its current treatment capacity. And that is to provide for wherever the growth happens. Wastewater treatment plant is at, its capacity is 6.8, and as you can see here, our average day is about 5. So we are anticipating some growth and actually have what wastewater treatment plant number 2 designed and permitted sitting on the shelf ready to go to construction should we need to start construction to provide for them. Any growth there, but it's going to be out by Water Plant 3. But it'll be a 2-year construction project, 18-month construction project, so it's not something that you want to wait until you're almost out of capacity here and then say, oh, let's start the process, because it takes a year, year and a half to design a permit, another year, year and a half to construct. So it's been designed and sitting on the shelf, ready to go. As soon as we figure that we're going to need the capacity in a year and a half.
The hydrant flushing program that's on the way.
Yes, I should have mentioned that. Thanks for bringing that up. We have had some issues with a couple of brown water complaints, red water complaints. In an area, most of them have come from the area right around White Butte, Royal Palms. What happens is because of the lower velocities in pipes, sometimes you get some sediment coming out of the water. It's mostly calcium and iron, corrosion byproducts that settle out. And now and then something might increase the velocity and stir some of that up, and people will get it coming out of the tap. So we have had a couple of complaints, a few complaints in that area, and did some investigations, and we think we have a kind of a problem area of sediment because you have water treatment plant number 1 that's feeding from Palm Coast Parkway. Water treatment plant number 2, which is feeding south of 100, and you have this one area in the middle that, depending on where the demands are, the water can be fed from the north or the south. And you kind of get this moving back and forth like this, but not a lot of velocity in the area. It presents some opportunities for the water to settle out, or sediments to settle out. Keep in mind that the pipes are large enough to supply not only domestic supply, but firefighting. So your velocities in the pipe on a normal basis are very low, and then every now and then you have like a fire truck hook up to it or a water main break, and all of a sudden the velocities increase significantly, might stir some of that stuff up. So we've initiated a program to do what we call unidirectional flushing. And basically what we've done is we've gone back to the computer and we've modeled the flows, determined where the low velocity pipes are, have developed a plan using a computer model of valving so that we can force high velocities through some of these pipes out fire hydrants. And we have this set plan. And we're doing small areas at a time. The water technicians are going out after 6 o'clock at night and doing these valving and flushing operations to try to flush some of those sediments out. We've started in the P section between Whiteview and Royal Palms and completed that. Moved over into the R section and completed the area inside the Rimfire loop. Now we're west of Rimfire Elementary this week. Next week we'll be going north of Rimfire, south of Whiteview. We have a system that it's an automated info alert system, it's called, that uses the data that's in our billing software to pulls those phone numbers out of the billing software and automatically calls the residents and lets them know we're going to be in the area doing this flushing. And as a result, even though, one week we were affecting 1,200 accounts, we only got something like about 8 complaints from people that said they weren't notified. So we think the info alert system is very effective, obviously very efficient rather than sending manpower out there to hang door tags or whatever. And what we found is the ones that didn't get the information, we actually didn't have the correct phone number in the account database. Either they changed their phone, switched from to a cell phone, or the number is no longer valid. So it's done a couple of things. It's actually helped us update databases too. But that program will continue. I think next week we're hoping to finish up the midsection. And then the following week we'll be going down, and actually we also have an area south, the southernmost part of Palm Coast, in the S section that we'll be getting after that. Well, not an uncommon phenomenon you see in a lot of, you read a lot in the journals,
right,
about systems having these red water, brown water issues. And most of it's due to corrosion, sediments from corrosion. I don't know whether you ever watch Bravo, but on the Cake Boss in Hoboken, New Jersey, one night he went to make some cakes and he got brown water.
So right, it was a chocolate chip.
Yeah.
Well, will this be done on like an annual basis or every 6 months? Or?
What we will do is we will keep an eye on it. First of all, we have determined that it appears to have been very effective. But you can't see inside the pipe. So what we think has been very effective probably was, but time will tell. So we'll be monitoring the area pretty closely. And if we find that there's still brown water out there, we'll have to go back and redo or update the program. But we haven't done this kind of unidirectional flushing. We've never done it to the sophisticated level we're doing it now with the computer program predicting the velocities. Before, it was pretty much a hit and miss. If we got a brown water complaint, we'd go out and flush some hydrants in the area. Hopefully, we got it cleared out and wait for the next event. It'll be interesting to see if by using the computer program to predict the velocities, whether we were that much more effective than the random approach before. And then there may be other areas that we can use that process if we get other components.
Will this also have some effect on the disinfection problems that you might have in some areas too?
Probably not, because the brown water does not contribute to the potential bacteria issues with the lack of disinfection. So brown water and drinkability of the water, or the drinkability of the water, really aren't related. two different issues. The disinfection, of course, as you know, we put the chloramines normally, occasionally switch to chlorine. That's to make sure we don't grow any bacteria in the water. Brown water or red water doesn't have anything to do with bacteria.
Just like water. Just like the logical.
Yes. Well, and there are issues. Like, for instance, if you've got some of this stuff got stirred up and it's going into your home, you don't want to be doing your laundry because it could stain your white clothes. So you don't want to do that. And obviously, you don't want to drink it, you know, but it'll clear up fairly quickly after we're done flushing. And this also has nothing to do with the normal color that's in the water. If you have a white bathtub, you know that we have color in our water. It's the organics in the water that is naturally occurring, and it's not, that color is not removed in the treatment process. So the color in the water is also safe to drink and has nothing to do with this brown water, red water issue.
Any other questions or comments from Richard?
Oh, and by the way, we won the Northeast Regional Taste Test for our drinking water, but we did not win it at the state level. But we did win on Tuesday the Palm Coast Water Boys Walk, won the 7th consecutive Top Ops Challenge at the state level. So we'll be going back to the Nationals again this year to try to bring home the national trophy.
I don't know whether it's an appropriate question at this time, and if it is, just tell me. Is there a status on what we might do with Beverly Beach as far
sure.
as sewer treatment?
Sure. Be more than happy to. We have been working with the county for a couple years now to try to figure out a solution for Beverly Beach. Beverly Beach is a county-owned and operated wastewater system that has a package plant that's aged and has some issues that the county inherited. And since the county took over that system, they've been trying to figure out what they want to do with this plant. Their initial idea was to build a new plant. Decommission that plant and build a new plant. Even back then, and Bill was on the council at the time, we suggested that they interconnect with us, but they didn't want to interconnect with us. They went forward with their plans to build the plant. After they got through the design and all that, they actually bid the project, and the bids came in much higher than the amount of money they had. So that kind of set them back and decided because they didn't have the funding to build the plant as designed and did. So it kind of set them back and they backed up and tried to figure out plan B. Ultimately, we decided the best thing would be to hook to Palm Coast. They have challenges with that because now they've got to go back to those people that promised them the money, the grants from the USDA and the DEP and everybody that was going to help fund that project, and basically it's a total project scope change. So they've been working. We actually drafted the interlocal agreement February of 2010 and presented it to the county, and took a year before they're ready to start hashing out the details of the interlocal agreement because of this funding issue that they've got. In the meantime, we have put our engineers to work to finish the design of phase one of Beachside Sewer, which puts a master pump station on the other side of the intracoastal and a force main back to our wastewater plant. So our project is designed, with the exception of the final design on the pump station. And the county is now designing the force main that will go from Beverly Beach to our master station. We still have yet to execute the interlocal agreement. And so we won't bid our project until the interlocal agreement is executed. The county will pay us impact fees for the amount of sewer they're going to send to us. those impact fees will pay for a major portion of our project. The rest of the portion of our project, we hope, will earn a return on that investment when other customers west of the Intracoastal hook up.
And we have the site now for the
pump? Yes. Part of the agreement with the part of the agreement with the county is that they provide the site, and that was actually a part of the joint settlement agreement in 07. So the utility actually owns a parcel of land over on A1A, but it's not the ideal location because it's a bit south of the bridge. The agreement with the counties, they're actually providing a parcel on basically what's going to be a park site at the foot of the bridge on the beach side. So that's all part of the interlocal, and the design is based on putting that pump station on that site. Can I tell you when we're actually going to be moving forward with it all?
Well, I guess when the county gets all their
ducks in a row.
Anything else for Richard? Not, we'll go to John for some updates.
Okay, our stormwater efforts have been on recalculating all the ERUs, or equivalent residential units, that have been generated by, or the need for that has been generated by the new stormwater ordinance. So we are spending most of our time on that. We do have a system where we calculate it. We have quality control review it, and then I approve the final calculation so that we have a kind of paper trail there, and that's for auditing purposes also, and just plain accuracy, so that when we're done, hopefully we are done now. There are going to be a lot of, we expect after we're done, and that should be by August, no later. People will make appeals for sure of that, so we've got to dedicate staff time to that. That's our biggest effort right now. The next one is our stormwater modeling. We've done two areas of Palmco's, two sections, the old flatted section, which comprised approximately 2,000 lots, let's say, in all the roads associated with its swales, ditches, and canals. We've done two of those already. We are going to complete two more by the end of this month. So we will have about 40 of those sections, 42 sections total within Palmco. So we're 5% done at the end of this month with that effort. It's a very expensive proposition. We're trying to train in-house people to be able to do it and get staff to go out in the field and do take measurements out there, but that is also taking some time. So that's a long-range type thing.
What's involved with that, Tom?
It's as far as the we will do, the work that we will do.
Yeah, what are they doing?
We've got to go capture the data, all the information out there in the field, what the ditch width is, what elevation it is from where, any pipes that are in that, the elevation of those, what size they are. That is captured by both us and the consultant now. Consultant just does a very small portion of it. Then it's put into the computer in a sort of format. We've established a standard format for all of it. After that is all done, then we get elevations, as much information as we possibly can, and then we can run the model, and it will tell us what happens for various rainfall events. Then we do an exercise, which is calibrating the model. We have a rainfall event. If we know what the intensity is, and what the elevations are, then we can look and say, will the model predict this same thing if we put in these same parameters? So that we know then that the model is working correctly. That's the calibration step, and that's usually the final step. And then we take that and we run it with what-if scenarios. What if we have a rainfall of this over here and there and everything else? Will the system work? And it tells us of any shortcomings we might have in the system.
And point out the weaknesses, presumably.
Exactly, yes. And then we can propose corrections to those. We can even say, okay, if we try this, if we do this, what will happen to the system? And we can look at it and see if it, in fact, will work. And then if it does work, then we've got to figure out what it's going to cost and how long it's going to take and whether we have the resources or not. And the alternatives. So there may be several alternatives to those. So what we have to do in-house right now, we are looking for a training class on how to run that model, and that's one of the big things. The manufacturers, so the people that wrote the program, the software, they have training classes. We will send two of our staff members to that training class so they know how to run. We have two surveyors there doing all the field work, and they will continue to do that, probably do a little bit more. And then other staff, as available, will enter in. It's also an effort to coordinate with our IT department, which has our what's called GIF, or Graphic Information System, that provides a lot of input, and they actually accumulate the data and tabulate it. So it's a citywide effort, obviously. It doesn't happen with just us. But that's where our priorities are right now, the stormwater model and recalculating the CRUs. And then, of course, it's budget time, so we're starting to work on the budget, and that's going to be an interesting process this year.
Is this part of the swale rehabilitation work that...
Yes, one of the...
started well, a number of years ago?
Yes, it is. And that's... That was one part of what happened. We had a facilities plan, and we are updating that plan. I just sent that out today for review and input from other departments that basically evaluated the system and said you need to do this, 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 and this without the benefit of the model. But it was obviously...
Would you have, like, original elevations or power?
Yes, we have all the original as-built elevations from ITT Community Development Corporation. So it was recognized that right away. We didn't need a model to tell us the swales would start filling in over the years or had changed a little bit. So we need to bring those back to their original condition. And that's one of the things that we could tell that we needed to do. We saw pipes failing, so we... Well, those pipes need to be replaced, and valley gutters, I think, are identified in there. That identifies the scope of the work and the cost of the work. Then we take that, we submit it to the state, they approve it, and then we have the ability then to borrow money for these projects that are delineated in this report.
You're doing that now, right?
We're doing that now, yes.
I mean, for borrowing or...
Yes, we just completed our last two projects with the state revolving fund, where we borrowed money at an interest rate of, I think, about 3% for 20 years. And there's about $1 million left because of the pricing was lower than expected. We have about $1 million of a $7 million loan that started out. We have about $1 million left, but we have to update our plan. Our plan is over 5 years old or something like that. So they said, you update that, submit that to us, and then we'll see about when you use the money. So that's all part of that process. As far as the model goes, it was recognized in that report that we needed to model what we needed to do. When the system was built in 1977, ITT analyzed it to make sure it would work and make any recommended changes. And that's the last time any analysis, full analysis of the whole stormwater system has been done. So. Now, the methods to do that now have changed dramatically, so we're using today's methods to analyze our system to make sure that it in fact says that it works. We're pretty sure that it works. It needs to be tweaked, but over time, things are going to change a little bit. We have canals with earthen banks. If those fill in a little bit, we want to know what effect that's going to have, or where do we dig and how much do we dig.
And it doesn't help you at all as to determining whether the pipes under roads and things like that are holding up, or it seems like when they pop up, it's an emergency, right? Something that you didn't anticipate, or do you have some program?
Well, we have looked at that, and what we basically said, and this is part of the program for our budgeting purposes, we said that the pipes were all put in about a 13-year period, and they're all basically the same material for the most part. The vast majority of them are the same material. They're galvanized, asphalt-coated, steel, corrugated pipe. And the assumption was that they'll all fail. They have a life of about 25 to 35 years, and they will all fail about the same time.
Over so a 13-year period?
Over a 13-year period. And we then just took a bell curve and said, okay, let's assume that they're gonna deteriorate about the same time over this 13-year period. So, if you're familiar with the bell curve, it's a formula you can write. And you're saying we're assuming the failure is going to be at some mathematical rate, and it's an all mostly a curve right in the middle of the bell where it's highest. And then we equated that to pipe failures over a 13-year period, so the base of the curve is 13 years. And then the middle is where most of your failures occur, and you get the number of failures, and then you can equate that to dollars, and we did that for budgeting purposes. In fact, you were in a discussion when we talked about that's what we're going to need, and this is the money we're going to need, and do we pay that, do that pay-as-you-go, or do we do that borrow money now up front and try to take care of those things? And I think the decision is some of both. And we are, in fact, the larger pipes, which convey water under roadways for canals, are being replaced with money that's borrowed. Smaller pipes are kind of pay-as-you-go type situation, which we are doing now. In fact, a lot of that work has been taken over by the Public Works Department, and they can do it on an as-needed basis. We just don't have the funds to be able to work ahead and stay ahead of that. But we are evaluating each of those pipes. They're doing a very good job staying enough ahead so that there might be some road subsidence or a hole in the end of the road, and before it totally collapses, that pipe, they know it's got to be replaced, and that's being done. So they're staying just slightly ahead of it. Ideally, you want to replace that pipe the day before it collapses. That's, from an economic standpoint, that's your best. You've used up the pipe to the total length of its estimated useful life, and you don't have to spend any money or waste any of that life. You don't want to replace it 5 years ahead of time. That would be, you lose a lot of pipe life, and that's dollars. So, but you don't want to wait for the road to collapse, then you get an unsafe condition. So that's what's going on right now. But we're smaller pipes, and when I say smaller, the typical division is 48 inches and smaller are small pipes. Anything larger than 48 is considered a large pipe, and into that category of let's borrow some money and look at a loan or funding from other sources rather than pay as you go. We are getting a lot of requests on a lot of interest on the stormwater ordinance. We have completed all the subdivisions that needed to be redone, and those, when I say subdivisions, that is affected single-family residential lots to the fact that if you have a new subdivision like in Arlington or Hamptons that was built since 1985, they have a stormwater permit. So they have common areas, and they get a credit for having a stormwater system because that does, in fact, help our system. It helps attenuate the water, and that's really what we're looking at, is volume. So that what we see is water. Instead of a big slug of water coming down, we see a small stream over a longer period of time. It makes it easier for our system. It takes it's less burden on our system, I guess, is the best way to put it. For that, those lots within that subdivision do get a credit. I think that's a 23% credit. Now, the older sections of Palm Coast that do not have a stormwater permit, and the water flows directly from their yards into the swale and into the ditch and into the canals, they pay an $8 fee. That's the base charge per ERU. And one lot, single-family lot, is considered one equivalent residential unit, obviously. So you'll see all kinds of discussions. And then we have various credits. I think we have about 7 different credits that you can get and 2 or 3 different exemptions. But those are basically for commercial areas or larger subdivisions that don't apply to the same family lots. So basically the change was in more commercial areas and non-residential areas. We've calculated all the subdivisions. Now we are going to the individual non-residential accounts in there. So we've got a list of 400 of those. We've done about 125 of them, or we're about a quarter done with those. So we estimate that we can be done basically by August is what we're looking at. And then we'll have appeals and questions along the way, I'm sure. That slows us down a little bit.
Anything else for John? Anybody have any other comments? I'd just like to say that, and I meant to mention this at some of the previous meetings, but in the weekend review, you put in some pretty dramatic pictures of canals that have been cleaned. Mm-hmm. And I mean, for the average person, it really shows what you're doing. I know you haven't put them in the last few weeks, sir.
No, we've completed, in fact, last week, I think we completed our last structure. Well, you'll see in this month's review the two crossings. You see pictures of those. Okay. And basically, they were circular or round corrugated metal pipes under roadways where canals, maybe two or three pipes together. Where we've changed that to a concrete box that was made on site. We had to basically stop the road traffic. That was our biggest complaint, that people had to detour around, and that detour was a four-month detour, so that people were upset about that. But you will see in the month in review, and I think all of you probably get that or have that available to you to see pictures of those structures.
What I was talking about was the weekly one.
Oh, okay.
It comes out
yeah.
the week, and we just get some pretty good pictures in some of those areas, too.
Yeah, we're trying to make it a little more visual and a little more aesthetic rather than just verbiage, because it's kind of boring after a while.
It looks very good. Any discussions of matters not on the agenda? Not all. Call for a motion for adjournment.
Motion to adjourn.
Second. All in favor? All right. Don't let us.